to the tax and benefit system, and trends in the cost of living, including what they mean for key aspirations like housing, and changes in savings and personal debt, and how they affect people's sense of economic insecurity and opportunity. Now, our job is not to look at these trends in isolation, nor just to view them from a macro perspective. Rather, we need to understand the cumulative impact, the total impact, of these different challenges on the reality of life on a low to middle income in Britain over the next decade. Now, at the moment, there is, of course, a lot of public and media recognition about the current post-recession squeeze in living standards, and this chart shows that real wages have been falling for the last year, and this is likely to continue to 2013. This isn't going to go away this year or next year. But there is far less awareness that this is a long-term challenge, as Clive was saying. It predates the recession. As this graph shows, after a long rise, real wages have been stagnant since around 2003. And it's also the case, though it's not shown here, that there is evidence of wage growth falling behind productivity growth, so the fruits of growth are not being fully shared. And this is an international challenge. This is a key point. In the US, we see much more long-standing and extreme versions of these trends. And it's not just the US, it's Canada and other countries too, although not all countries. As the first graph here makes clear, it's been more than a generation in the US since there's been an increase in average real wages at the same time as GDP has grown steadily. In fact, the relationship between wages and productivity has completely ruptured. As the chart on the right-hand side shows, there has been escalating inequality during this period. Incredibly, two-thirds of all income growth in the US went to the top 1% of the population between 2000 and 2008. So what's the root cause of all this? Well, it's much debated and there's no real clarity, which is in part why we are setting up this commission. Some point to the growth of globalisation and trade. Others to the growth of profit at the expense of labour's share of national income. A leading view, advanced by economists at the LSE and elsewhere, is that technological changes over the last 30 years have meant that, in the UK, we've seen a significant reduction in the share of what you might call mid-level jobs, shown in the middle of this chart, at the same time as there has been an increase in higher quality and lower quality jobs, shown on the right and the left of the chart, which many people think is underpinning some of the trends we're seeing in wages. And as this next graph shows us, the share of national income going to those on low to middle incomes has fallen significantly since the 1970s. And at the same time as this has happened, a higher proportion of household income has come from tax credits and benefits, shown on this chart by the two lines moving further apart over more recent years. Now, this raises the question about the capacity of the tax and benefit system to play an ever larger role in counteracting the falling share of wages going to low to middle earners. Now, it's also important to bear in mind when you're trying to think about this whole picture that some major social changes have meant that some of these trends that I've been describing have, until recently at least, not been fully exposed. Most importantly, as the first chart shows, we've seen long-term growth in female participation in the labour market, which has supported the rise of dual-earning households. But this has levelled off over recent years, and it's not at all clear if we're going to see the same type of growth again in the next decade. And as everyone will be aware, and the chart on the right-hand side makes clear, living standards have been propped up by the rise in personal debt, which again has gone into reverse, with little prospect of it playing the same role again in future decades. Now, it's also important to bear in mind that the pressures that households are feeling at the moment are not just about income, although income is key. They also stem from a sense that some of the key aspirations in life, the good things in life, are moving out of their reach. Most acutely, home ownership has become much harder to retain for people on low to middle incomes as a result of not just stagnant wages, although that's important, but higher prices and tighter mortgages. As the first chart here shows, the amount of time it would take to save for a deposit for a first home has grown rapidly to a staggering 45 years for a typical person on a low to middle income. And as the other chart makes clear, and as Clive was indicating, there's been a dramatic shift away from home ownership towards private rented accommodation for the under 35s in Britain, a trend that we only see continuing in the next 10 years. So what does this all add up to? Well, it's certainly a very stark challenge, and it's very, very easy to paint a bleak picture about the decade ahead. Even with growth, we could get stuck in an era of flat wages, higher prices, constrained credit, limited increase in labour market participation, and a tax and benefit system which is struggling. But just as we can no longer assume an automatic connection between resumed growth and higher living